Welcome to the Couple Money Podcast. If you're looking to become financially free together, this is your show. Here's your host, Elle Martinez.
What's your happily ever after? I'm not talking about the fairy tale where you come into a windfall from a distant relative who's left their fortune to you. I want to know, what are you looking forward to? What do you want to do in the next few years? Can you describe how you want your retirement to go? Whether you have a clear picture of what you want, or you're just starting to think about it, today's episode will be a fun listen. Roger Whitney, the retirement answer man, will be on to talk about retirement and what that actually means for you. We'll also get into how to prepare for retirement without depriving yourself of joy now, how sprints and smart goals can take you closer to the life you want, and how to talk to one another and use those differences as a superpower rather than have them tear your marriage apart. I was thinking of breaking this episode up into two parts since there was so much covered, but the conversation is so connected it made more sense to make it into one big show. I hope you enjoy. Even though retirement is a huge part of people's financial goals, many have a hard time preparing for it. As Roger Whitney has helped families plan for their futures, he knows many of the hurdles that you're probably facing right now.
Well, I think a lot of the problem is, and you know, I've been planning for 25 years and was, I'll call it traditionally trained as a financial planner. And the way that the best practices help you plan for retirement really doesn't resonate with a lot of people. I mean, I'm 48, and I don't even really know what retirement means to me. I'm thinking about what I'm going to have for lunch after we talk here. So it's so far out, and we can have these grandiose ideas, and we know they're all going to change, that it just sort of, okay, if I have to pick a goal, then I'll pick that, is sort of how we define our retirement goals most of the time, and because it just feels so far away for all of us. Like you, if you have small kids, and you're married, and you're running a business, and I mean, you're so busy in life, who wants to talk about this stuff? You're just trying to keep all the balls in the air. And I think that's how a lot of us feel when we're thinking about, you know, long-term planning. Yeah, I know it's important, but I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
I got to wash the dishes, or I got to go mow the lawn, or I got to go do whatever.
With his education and credentials as a certified financial planner, private wealth investor, and accredited investment fiduciary, Roger has the technical expertise to run the numbers and explain them to you. However, through experience, both his and his clients, he's evolved with his philosophy on retirement. While still respecting the numbers, he understands how important the personal considerations are.
As far as my planning philosophy came from, I grew up in the financial planning industry I started in 1990, which is a long time ago. And I learned the traditional the traditional planning process, which really focuses on investments, right? You figure out where you want to be 25 years from now, and then you look at what you have, and you look at how that might grow, and you identify the gap of how much more you need to save. And then the solution for most planners is, okay, well, you better sacrifice more of your life right now by saving more, so you can fill that gap, or you're going to have to settle for a lot less later on. And that is basically the two choices that a lot of people face when they're thinking about their finances. And that's really depressing. And in the 90s, when I was young and dumb but thought I was smart as an individual, I was in my 20s, and I made a little bit more money than I should have early on, and I just assumed, wow, this will never change. It'll always increase. And, you know, investing is easy, and it was easy because it was the new economy and the tech bubble. And then that blew up, and then I realized, holy cow, I can actually lose money for people. And I can actually lose money for myself and see my income go down significantly, but I was living my lifestyle like my income would always go up. And those are recipes for disaster, as we found out as a family, and I had to go through that and go through Yeah, I don't know about you. When you make a financial mistake, you almost have to go through a grieving process because you beat yourself up so much about it.
Yeah.
And so I sort of had to go through that and come to terms that it was okay. And then I just had to make sure I learned my lessons.
One lesson that he picked up was about taking care of his life now while still preparing for the future, which can be incredibly tricky.
But from planning for retirement, what really has affected me more as I've gotten older is this constant struggle that we feel when we're trying to work together to create a great life, because that's what you and your husband are doing, and I'm sure everybody that's listening, that's what I'm trying to do. And so every money decision that we make, it's like if you can picture a teeter-totter, and some people on one end of the teeter-totter is today, and on the other end is tomorrow, you know, whether that's 20 years from now or whatever. And we're always trying to find that balance to living as well as we can today and still feeling comfortable that we're going to have a great tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, so if you can imagine how it, you know, if you've ever tried to balance with a friend on a teeter-totter, this is probably going back years, it always just sort of wobbles. You're never perfectly balanced.
As we try to find our equilibrium between now and later, it can sometimes be easy to fall to one extreme or the other.
And some of us say, screw tomorrow. We're just going to live for today because of everything we read. There's nothing we can do. It's too difficult to plan for with all the, you know, how much money we'd have to save. So they just live for today. And so they're way out of whack and they're going to sacrifice their future. We hear about those people all the time with credit card debt and overspending and everything else. But what I found is there's actually a lot of people that tilt too far the other direction. They're so worried about tomorrow because they listen to the financial news and they're worried about the economy. They're worried about their health. They're worried about investing. They're worried about everything else, that they basically sacrifice the only life they have right now because they're trying to be so prudent about things. And I remember when I was younger, my mom, she was a single mother for most of my life, and she raised myself and my two sisters. And she obviously had to sacrifice a lot to raise us. And then when we were grown and I was in college, she and I would have this active debate about living for today or living for tomorrow. And she was always about, she was sacrificing her life with this promise of retirement. And she was missing a lot of things because she was working so hard. And me being young and in my early 20s, I was like, oh, I'll live for today. You're crazy, Mom. Come on. And obviously I was wrong and she was wrong too. But for her, when she was 48, she passed away from cancer. She never got to that tomorrow. And now I'm 48 and I'm struggling with the same balance with, you know, two kids, one in college, one about to be in college. And that really influenced a lot of how I plan things, because it's easy to say, yeah, you need to save more, you need to save more, you need to budget to the nth degree. I agree with that to a point, but we also have to make sure we don't miss the only life we have. And I think that's sort of how I've evolved from those two bad choices of traditional planning to more of a multidimensional. It's not just about saving for the future. You need to make sure you find some balance.
So just how do you plan for a future that could have job loss, health problems, or a crisis? Roger thinks breaking things down into sprints can be a practical solution and keep you motivated as you move towards your longer-term goals.
My counsel would be, when you're thinking about this, especially as a couple, is rather than get freaked out about trying to figure out the rest of your life, and I'm saying even if you're near retirement, that makes you feel helpless because there's so many variables that can happen in your life. Is I have really embraced, and this is probably a more recent evolution in how I counsel clients and couples, is to set short-term sprints, to sprint to in very systematic ways in your financial life and in your personal life and in your professional life. And those sprints are focused at your long-term aspirations, recognizing that those aspirations are going to change a million times. And that gives people a lot more power and sense of control over their financial future. When you're thinking about retirement, our long-term lifestyle, yes, you need to save and invest. You know, we talk about investing, and that's generally how people think about wealth creation. But wealth creation really isn't about investing. In fact, historically, investing was more about preserving and growing wealth that you've created through your efforts. So investing was more about preserving wealth creation, the wealth you created, rather than creating the wealth. And that's something that's a whole nother discussion. So in your financial life, where your wealth will be created is through your cash flow decisions, how much you spend and how much you earn and how much you keep. A good financial sprint should be focused not just on finances, but also on your professional life. So a sprint, you want to make sure that it has that SMART goal methodology. Okay, so they're specific, they're measurable, they're actionable, and they're realistic, and they're time bound. So what I suggest that couples do, and this is a really cool thing, because it's something that two people can buy into and that's short enough that they can see the finish line and they can work together to get there. So it's a really empowering thing, not just for individuals, but especially for couples to come together to work towards a common goal and have lots of little wins along the way.
So if you're thinking about setting up these goals and doing these sprints, just remember, it's better to break them down and get specific rather than make these large, vague goals.
So an example of a personal goal within your life, because if we're trying to balance our teeter-totter, an example of a personal goal would be starting November 1st, we will have a date night once per week. That's a great personal sprint. Mm-hmm. Not we should spend more time together, which is how most of us think about it. So in my personal sprint for this year is every month I committed to writing a note to my son, my daughter, and my wife, letting them know something that I admire about them. That's my personal sprint for this year. So that's a way of growing on a personal level. It could be health. It could be, you know, diet. It could be anything, but something that improves the value of your life on a personal level. So that's an example of a personal sprint. Now, on a professional sprint, and this is where I think if you're the younger you are and you realize this, the more power you have in this, your professional sprints, I think, is probably the most important thing you could do to create if you're worried about retirement, this is where you should focus. Yes, investing and, not having debt and everything else. But on a professional standpoint, what can you do to create income sources or improve your cash flow situation? So if generating extra income is the driver of your wealth creation in your life, then how do you do that? Well, yeah, you can budget, but I hate budgeting. I hate budgeting. That is a horrible word. I don't want to be a bookkeeper of my life. And there's only so much frugaling we can do, right?
And that makes sense on so many levels. I'm a big believer that we should optimize our spending, but at some point it does cross over into deprivation. And that's its own imbalance because you're putting money ahead of people. Having professional-based sprints can be an incredible boost in your accounts, yes, but it can also help you to be better prepared and move closer towards your long-term goals.
I mean, you're raising two kids. If you switch brands, you'll save some nickels and dimes, but it's not, and it's a good practice to do, but it's not really going to move the needle. Where the real opportunity is how do we increase the revenue or the income? And examples of that could be, is it worth getting extra training to make myself, to get that promotion or to make myself more marketable? That could be a good personal sprint or professional sprint, or intentionally networking with others in your industry so you can have a parachute in the event something happens in terms of, being laid off or something like that. But it has to be in that SMART structure. So a professional, it could be in the next 48 days, we will identify how to earn more income doing something we enjoy. That's a good SMART professional sprint that, a husband and wife can work on together to improve their situation. Not, I need to find a job next year, which is how a lot of us think about it. So that's what I mean about these sprints, and that's where I think they can be powerful, not only to continually move the dial financially, but from a personal perspective, to get you and your husband or you and your wife on the same page to work together towards something. And that does a couple things. One, obviously it moves the dial financially, but two, it brings the two of you together on a common goal. And when you achieve those, you can get to celebrate them a little bit. And that gives a sense of empowerment. It gives you a sense of control, which is, as humans, we really sort of seek that because we feel so worried about everything we don't have control over. And psychologically, it takes you from feeling helpless to feeling much more empowered. And the benefits of that psychologically and as a couple are extremely powerful.
Before you begin these sprints, the two of you need to talk. If you'd like to sit down and discuss things for a while over some wine or beer, go for it. We've done it and loved it, but it's not for everyone. With so much going on, it can be much easier and more fun if you break down these discussions into small ones, maybe chats, and make that a part of your routine.
If we can't figure out the future, health-wise, markets-wise, job-wise and everything else, if we can't figure out the future, let's ignore everything about predicting the future. Let's make some very reasonable assumptions, and it sounds like you do this. You have little money dates, or I call them little conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So you can and have the right little conversations with a checklist from a financial perspective, so you can just course correct lots of little times along the way. And my secret is, I never want to have a big conversation with my wife. And trust me, I learned this the hard way because we went through, 25 years. You go through a lot of trials and tribulations because you're young and you're evolving and things change. And I've handled a lot of divorces, unfortunately, just being, practicing for so long. And what I found was a lot of the divorces that I handle and definitely a lot of the problems that we've had in our marriage that we've had to work through were a result of something really annoying the other person or some misalignment, right? Some misalignment between me and Shauna and us not addressing that misalignment. So over time, say I annoyed her about something. And for a long time, I was very stressed out because I was starting a business and had a lot of pressure and I let it get to me and I didn't treat her the way I should have. And she puts up with it for a little bit. But in her mind, those are just little resentments that build up and build up and build up that we never addressed. And it almost destroyed our marriage. And by the grace of God, we were able to repair it. And now it's better than it's ever been. But those little resentments that build up, and it could be as stupid as a toilet seat, obviously, bluntly, that we live these lives in our head. So if we don't have those little conversations to make sure that we deal with them when they're small, it builds up and it will, it'll be that last little stack of, strain of hay on the stack that's going to make the whole thing crumble down. It's the same way with money.
As you probably know firsthand, sometimes it can be hard. Not because you married someone difficult, but the two of you see and do things differently. And this might sound weird to you, but you may find taking a personality test will give you insights on how you can be more effective with communication, but also more respectful with your spouse.
That's one thing that I started to implement over the last couple of years is using personality assessments with people. And I think as a couple, I would say it's worth the money, and it's not that much money. It's, $30, $40 to do personality assessments to see how you approach things. Yeah, a good example is for me, I use the DISC assessment, and I'm a high D, which means I am an action-oriented dreamer about the future, act before I think a lot of times and figure it out. So that's how I approach a lot of things. My wife is a C, which is much more very contemplative, slow to change, wants to analyze every situation before they make a decision. which both qualities are extremely good, right? And together, mm-hmm. so think of that. We have two superpowers, me, action and movement, her, contemplative and reasoning and analyzing. Those are great superpowers. But, and we've discovered this prior to doing the disc, but those superpowers can come together to really make a complete package of moderating both extremes, right?
Yes.
Or they can tear you apart because you don't self-identify each other and yourself, and it's just friction from one wanting to, you know, it's like we have a 9-month-old Great Dane, and when I take him for a walk and I'm teaching him, he is pulling me, and he's 100 pounds already. He is pulling me to go. So he's the D, and I'm, in this situation, the S or the C, I'm the one trying to walk slowly, and that's a big battle rather than both of us finding a happy medium together. So that's probably a good way to think about it. So I think having those personality tests and self-identifying yourself, but also seeing how your partner approaches it, helps that communication. Because once you do something like that and you put a label to it, oh, there, I'm being a D, or look at her, she's being a D, it makes it less of she's just being, you know, she's not just frustrating me, she's just a D. That's how she's wired. That's her spirit. Mm-hmm. So just having that label sometimes helps to create some understanding.
If you want to find out more and dig into personalities and communication, please check out Roger's site. I have the link in the show notes so you can grab the tests. And if you don't have a routine for talking about your finances as a couple now, please carve out some time. We do ours on a monthly basis, but you don't have to. Doing it a few times a year can make a big difference in your lives.
You need to have 3 money talks every year. And if you can have those consistently and do it in the spirit that you talk about money dates, make it fun, it goes a long way, not just in moving the financial dial towards retirement, but it really gets you together so you guys can walk hand in hand and strengthen your relationship, which is pretty cool.
Thanks again to Roger for being a part of this show. Catch his podcast, The Retirement Answer Man, to learn how to create a path that draws you closer to your dreams. And join us next episode when certified financial planner Katie Brewer will be on. While we hope that things go our way both now and in the future, the unexpected can happen. Find out how you can prepare now so your loved ones are taken care of then. If you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast so you'll get that episode and all others as soon as they're released. It's free and easy. We're on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. You can also leave a review of the show on any of those sites. I'd love to hear what you think. The feed is also available on couplemoneypodcast.com so you can grab it on whatever service you prefer. Remember, as we're heading into 2016, I want to have your votes on what you think are the best episodes of the Couple Money Podcast. Send me a message through Twitter or Facebook at Couple Money, or email me. And of course, you can visit the site and leave a comment. I hope you have a wonderful day. Until next time, take care.